It was 486 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. It's been called brilliant, a book for our times, one of the best handbooks on living ever written. It's M. Scott Peck's The Road Less Traveled, and it's our topic for Conversations today. I'm Susan McGinnis. This is Conversations, and welcome to it. My guest today is Brian Zerr. Brian says that the first time he read The Road Less Traveled, it impressed him as a pretty good book. The second time he read it, he thought that Peck had a lot of the answers. We'll be talking about this today. Welcome, Brian. Thanks for joining
us. Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Scott Peck opens The Road Less Traveled by saying, life is difficult. This is one of the great truths. It is a great truth, he said, because once we understand it, we can transcend it. This makes a lot of sense to me. And I was raised in a culture, I think, that would say, if a culture could speak, life is only difficult if you're not doing it right. Is that naive of me, or?
Well, no, actually I would say that your perception of that culture is accurate, and that's one of the biggest obstacles that we have to growing personally, is that we have this illusion that if we're not happy all the time, that something's wrong. I think one of the great things about The Road Less Traveled is that acknowledging that life is difficult is the first step in being able to admit the work that we have to do here. Because truly, living is a lot of work, and growing and learning to love and relate with each other is a lot of work. And if we think that it's not going to be difficult, we're setting ourselves up for a lot of disappointment and a lot of failure.
Because every time it becomes difficult, we would back away.
Or think that we're doing something wrong. Oh, so we start beating ourselves up and fall into a lot of guilt, which is very paralyzing. So it's actually a lot about acceptance. Acceptance of the conditions that we're in, acceptance of the hardships that we have to go through, and that in accepting them, we not only are able to transcend them, so to speak, by learning from them, we're also able to, I would say, deal with them more effectively, because we're really willing to get into the middle of the issues rather than skirt them, looking for the happy solution or the easy solution.
Okay. Get specific for me. What about life is difficult? What are life's difficulties? What are the things that we turn away from or think are our fault?
Well, I think that the things that are difficult about life is certainly our day-to-day relations with people more than anything. You know, you're in relationship with everybody that you come in contact with. A lot of people work with people in a certain environment, and they don't consider themselves in relationship with those people. Bottom line, you're in relationship with somebody that you're working with 40, 50, 60 hours a week. Whether you take responsibility for that relationship or not is your choice. So you can either approach that relationship consciously and be willing to put the work into it that it's going to take to make it successful, or you can approach it unconsciously and just let it do what it does. And that's when most people get into trouble.
Can I ask you a question about logistics? Can I be in relationship with, say, the 15 or 20 people who are in my immediate office at the university?
Well, you are in relationship with them, even to a very small degree. Maybe it's somebody you talk to 10 minutes a day. But the fact is you are spending 10 minutes a day with them, and that relationship has an effect on your life and an effect on theirs. What The Road Less Traveled is doing is asking us to take responsibility for every relationship that we have, which is basically every moment of our day. Because if we're not in relationship with other people, we're in relationship with ourselves.
This is Brian Zerr, our guest today on Conversations. Brian makes it his business and makes his living by lecturing on self-empowerment, on personal growth, and uses the tenets that M. Scott Peck offers in The Road Less Traveled to show people how to assist their own lives towards greater fulfillment. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely.
Brian Zerr, our guest today on Conversations. Tell me more about taking responsibility. Do we shirk, avoid responsibility most of the time?
Well, there's actually two extremes when you look at responsibility. There's the person that doesn't take enough. clinically, we could call that person a person with a character disorder, somebody who shirks responsibility, places blame on everything around them, is unwilling to look at themselves as the source of their problems. And then the other side of that extreme is the neurotic, which I think people tend to be more familiar with, the person that blames themselves for everything or is constantly taking too much responsibility. So those are the two extremes that we have, and the key is for us to try to find the balance between the two. Now, in The Road Less Traveled, what Dr. Peck is referring to is several different levels of responsibility. It gets pretty specific, actually. And I, some of the work that I've done in a program that I do called Self-Empowerment and another called Self-Discipline and Emotional Control deal with the responsibility issues as well. You know, responsibility is basically the ability to respond rather than react. And one of the things that we're really talking about is our emotional reactions and our behaviors that are a result of our emotional reactions. One of the things that is talked about in The Road Less Traveled is developing what is called a flexible response system.
Right.
Using your judgment over your emotions. If you really look around you, the people who just react to their emotions and then put out some sort of behavior in the real world based on those emotions are the people that are causing most of the conflict in this world. So in looking at taking responsibility, we're looking at looking at our emotions from an objective point of view rather than just being them and being controlled by them. We are able to detach ourselves from them, look at them, see whether or not they make sense to us or not, make a decision whether or not we want to give them value or not. And then as a result of that decision-making process, we then come up with ideas about what we're actually going to do in relation to the person that we're having the relationship with or the conflict with or whomever.
This means to me slowing things down tremendously. Isn't that so? I mean, if you make me mad, you just made me mad. And it happened just like that. And I reacted to you out of my anger. I didn't stop to think, ooh, what Brian did is creating in me, or I'm responding to what he did with by creating anger in myself. Where does that come from? I wonder why.
Why didn't you do that?
I think because I'm doing it very quickly. Brian, don't do that.
But you see, this is what we're being asked to do, is create what is called conscious hesitation.
Ooh.
And that's sort of my term. That's
it's
just
a nice
what
phrase.
I've come up with. But it, in one sense, takes away a bit of the spontaneity of life, but in another sense, gives you a wonderful feeling of responsibility. And if we were having a conversation here and you made me angry, I would get angry, but rather than lash out at you or say something out of defense, I might say, you know, well, Susan, that really makes me angry. And the reason I think that I'm angry is because blah, 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 so to speak. You see,
which gives me an opportunity to say, well, I meant it because of what you did the other day, or, well, I didn't mean to make you angry. What I was doing was this, so we can kind of sort this out, right?
Right, quite
often. We're taking
it
apart.
Quite often, the problem is we misunderstand people's intentions. You see, it's not what you say to me that makes me angry. It's what I think about what you said to me that makes me angry.
What I think, it's my opinion, it's my illusion,
well,
my construction of what's going on.
You say something to me, and I have a thought process that goes on that actually creates my emotions. This is a, have you ever heard of RET, Rational Emotive Therapy?
Right.
Dr. Ellis in New York. It was developed in the 50s. It's a basis of The Road Less Traveled as well, because it's something that Dr. Peck advocates, that you don't cause my emotions. You give me an event. What I think about that event causes how I feel. And then the feelings then motivate my behavior towards you in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at a process here where you have the thoughts, you have the emotions, then you have the behavior. Most people think that it's the circumstances that cause their feelings, or what somebody did to them, the treatment towards them that caused their feelings. And that's not the truth. The truth is there's a thought system that goes on unconsciously that you don't hear, that goes on in about 1/16 of a second, if I had to give it a number, that causes your emotions. So your anger is a result of that thought system, but you're not aware of that thought system. So the key in taking responsibility is to acknowledge your emotions and then take the time and effort to understand them and realize why they're there.
Like learning to walk, this will take some stumbling.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And just because you make a conscious choice to not react to your emotions doesn't mean that you're never going to do it again. But you're going to watch yourself do it next time.
Mm-hmm. What's that phrase again? Conscious hesitation?
Conscious hesitation.
That's very nice.
Yeah. And the key is really watching yourself. And once you become aware of something, like if you decide to notice a pattern about yourself, once you've taken that step of admission that there's something that you want to take a look at within yourself, you're going to start seeing it, and you're not going to be able to get away with it within yourself, if you know what I mean.
If you're truly examining.
Yeah, if you're really committed to the process, you're not going to be able to fool yourself or stay in denial, so to speak. Because that's quite often the trap we fall into, is we're denying what's really going on within us because we're unwilling to look at what's going on within us, because it's probably a very painful scenario to examine.
Dr. Peck says that we cause a lot of the suffering that we experience because we don't want to look, or don't want to take responsibility, or don't want to face life difficulties. Can you talk about that, about how we create our problems by not wanting to look inside?
Well, by not wanting to look inside or to look at the issues or dynamics behind what's going on in your life, you're avoiding. You know, you're avoiding the issues. The reason that we avoid those issues is because we're pretty uncomfortable with pain. Now, when I'm talking about pain, I'm not really talking about physical pain.
Right.
I'm talking about emotional pain. I mean, I'm talking about sadness, disappointment, frustration, stress, loneliness, fear, anxiety. The list is endless. Although it's amazing to me how a lot of people are really not in touch with emotional pain. One of the things I do in my workshop is I ask people to give me their experience of what they think emotional pain is. And a lot of people don't really know what to say. And as the answers start coming up, they're going, yeah, that's right. Now those things, that emotional pain, is what we're really trying to avoid most of the time, because it's really uncomfortable. And we are in a society that does not advocate feeling pain.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Americans consumed 2 tons of Tylenol last year.
2 tons?
You know, can you even imagine one? And if it's not Tylenol, we're drinking alcohol or eating food or any of the things that we use to numb ourselves out with. And if we're not numbing ourselves, we're distracting ourselves. Certainly in our American society, we have so many things to distract ourselves. We can try real hard and keep real busy to the point to where we never grow because we never take a look inside. One of the wonderful things about The Road Less Traveled is Dr. Peck advocates taking time by yourself, spending an hour a day doing absolutely nothing.
So once again, you're creating a hesitation. You're stopping, slowing things down.
Right. Contemplation has been referred to as the most powerful tool of psychotherapy or psychology. Simply, you've got the ability to find the answers yourself if you're willing to take the time to find them. And if you're willing to experience the pain that may be involved in making the right decision to deal with the issues that you have.
This is Conversations Today, a conversation with Brian Zur. Our topic is The Road Less Traveled. It's a book written, published by M. Scott Peck, this is it, in 1978, 486 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. It appealed to something in the American and in the world readers. We're talking about this subject today on Conversations. I'm Susan McInnes. Let's say I do this first step. I stop and I say, where does this emotion come from? Who is this part of Susan I'm looking at now? And it brings me pain. My instinct is probably going to be one of two things, to wallow in that pain or to avoid it. What's the prescription, doctor? When the pain comes up, what's the healthiest thing to do?
Well, the healthiest thing, and I am not a doctor, but I will give you my prescription.
Thank you.
The healthiest thing that the healthiest thing that I would say, or that I want to say, the reason I'm coming to this conclusion is because of the experience that I've had with a lot of other people and with a lot of different philosophies, mm-hmm. is that it's important for us to be able to just be with it, to just allow it to be there. For instance, maybe it's grief. You know, one of the things that's going on a lot in our society is a lot of people are now consciously dealing with grieving. Consciously dealing with it, what difference is that than the way that we used to treat grieving? The difference is that we're just simply allowed to feel it. Mm-hmm. And that if we allow suffering or pain to be a legitimate experience, then we allow ourselves to just be with it, and it's probably going to go away a lot sooner than if you're resisting it. I think there is something to learn from it. It definitely teaches you about the situation that you're in, because it brings up so many different aspects of what you're experiencing. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense to me. Ways to help one bring it conscious might be to write about it, talk to yourself about it, to extend this feeling. Does this make sense to you,
Jim? Yeah, and to also see what you're going to do about it. Now, we're talking about actually two different things here. One thing we're talking about is a painful experience that you may be remembering, or some sort of pain that's associated with something that was done to you in the past. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the pain that Dr. Peck is talking about is the pain that is a result of the decisions that you're going to make to solve your problems. Meaning, I may be in a situation where I'm unhappy, and I have certain choices. And the problem with my situation is that all of my choices don't feel good.
I see.
And to make the right choice, we have to be willing to go with the emotional pain that may be a result of that decision. Maybe it's leaving a relationship. Maybe it's changing careers. Maybe it's moving to another part of the country. All of those decisions are certainly going to involve some emotional pain. If you are not willing to experience that pain, you may make the wrong decision. You may make a decision that's the easy way out, or the one that's taking the pain away, rather than the decision that is really what you need to do. So it's one thing to look at it as, I'm in pain, such as the grieving process, and to deal with that. I think my experience with that, and my experience from the people that I've worked with, is that there is no prescription. There is no book that's going to tell you how long you're going to be in pain. But the longer you resist it, the bigger it's going to get.
Yes.
The more you're willing to be with it, the sooner it will probably leave you. And it may take years, it may take weeks, who knows. But once again, I think the pain that we're focusing on is the pain of decision making and making changes and stepping out of our comfort zone, mm-hmm. so to speak.
There are an awful lot of things conspiring to keep us in the comfort zone and to keep us from doing the work at hand. And the work at hand is not only hard, but in addition to pain, there's fear that is going to come up. So this is a courageous thing to do, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. The road less traveled was named for exactly what it means. It is the road less traveled. It's not the path that most people take. Mm-hmm. Although I have to admit, I'm certainly impressed with our country and the movement towards awareness and towards personal growth, because I think people have finally realized that things don't work the way that they never did work, but we're realizing that things never did work. That it's about time we face things consciously, we admit what's going on, we deal with them head on, and we have the courage to do that.
How did you come to this? And the question is, how did you come to a spiritual path?
One of those things that's always been a part of me. I was basically raised Catholic. I was an altar boy through 12, 13 years old, almost joined the seminary, was always very drawn towards religion, or spirituality is what I would really say I was drawn towards too, because actually as I became more conscious and grew up, I realized religion was a little bit too limiting for me. one of the things that really didn't work for me in my religion was that it excluded other people. Mm-hmm. If you were not of the Catholic faith, then you were not going to make it to the heaven that everybody was aspiring to make it to. And although I can't even say that I believe in all of that, and I'm not going to tell you about everything I do believe, but the notion was that there was exclusion there, that I was better than everyone else because I was of this faith. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe that. I believe that all faiths basically lead to the same God. There's many different names for the same God and many different paths to spirituality. So that didn't work for me. And then I became a born-again Christian at one point, and that didn't work for me. And then I've traveled around the world, and I've looked into Hinduism and been to India and done a lot of soul searching. And what I basically have discovered is that, for me, the essence of religion is what we're talking about. That's what's really important. And the essence of all religions is love. You know, being able to come from a loving intention. Being able to responsibly love yourself and love other people. So this has been something that's just always been a part of me. And I think my own personal situations in life have certainly pushed me towards it. I had a very difficult childhood. I came from a very dysfunctional family. My father was a very abusive alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And certainly those types of crises lead you to searching for sort of the truth behind it all, or the safety or the security or the comfort behind it all. And I always found comfort in the spiritual side of me. I can't really explain how it got there.
Right.
It's just always been there. And I've always known that my life was going to be an expression of that, that it was really the most important thing to me. Before I got into presenting and being a public speaker, the last thing I was doing was selling jewelry at Tiffany & Company in San Francisco. Now, I've done lots of different things, and many of them I was quite successful in, but I never felt that they were fulfilling to me. I've always wanted to sort of be a catalyst for people, because I know how much I've admired the people that have been catalysts for me and how important they were to me, mm-hmm. and how grateful I am to them for being there to listen and understand and be real. You know, so much of our life is not about being real. It's about clothes and jewelry and the things that we do rather than who we are and how we relate.
Mm-hmm. This is Brian Zur. We're talking On Conversations. As I've been listening to you, I've been thinking about Peck's notion of reality. It seems to me that there are a number of realities out there in the world, and that we tend to tie ourselves down to one, a limiting factor. When you said that you were raised Catholic in a difficult household, traveled, studied Hinduism, was attracted to this, attracted to that. You were exploring different realities, isn't that right? Expanding your notion of realities. And did each one of those offer you opportunities for change and growth?
Certainly. I'm one of those types of people that tends to dive headfirst into something. Mm. And then after I've realized that I'm really experiencing it, I jump right back out. And luckily, I'm able to do that. I know that about myself, so it allows me to go full into something and to experience it and then come back out and say, okay, well, here I am back to my center. What was that all about? What did I learn from it? What didn't I like about it? What did I like about it? And what did it have to teach me? And what I've sort of come to realize is that there are certain threads that connect everything that I've experienced to some degree. And the reason The Road Less Traveled is so wonderful to me and why I'm so passionate about it is because it talks about those common threads. You're talking about different realities and different perspectives and having the ability to open up your mind to other perspectives. That's one of the most crucial things you can do for yourself. Because, you see, Susan, you are a result of all the experiences that you've had. You have made decisions about life and who you are and who other people are because of those experiences. So your reality is your map, and it's very limited. You have not had every experience, so you have a limited experience, meaning you have a limited perspective.
But I invest myself in this perspective,
and you're very invested in it.
Yes.
You're very attached to it too, I'm sure.
And that's what keeps our map rather unclear, right?
Yeah, if we do not open up to other realities and try to understand other people's perspectives, then we're stuck. We're stuck in our own perspective. And the problem is that it's a limited perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a problem in that it doesn't allow you to see the reality. One of the sections or one of the disciplines of The Road Less Traveled is dedication to reality. And what Dr. Peck is referring to is to opening up the possibilities for you as a person, as an individual, to look at your convictions and to question them and say, why do I have them? To look at your concepts of yourself and say, why do I have these concepts of myself? Are they true? Once again, these maps of reality or these perceptions are learned. They're not something that we're born with. So your learned perceptions of yourself, where did they come from?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where would you think that they came from?
Experiences, things others said about me, things I've said about myself, probably a lot what my folks have said.
Absolutely. In fact, when we're children, our parents are literally like gods to us. And we look at their behavior and we listen to what they say and we take it basically as truth. We don't have the benefit of comparison as children,
mm-hmm.
in other words. We can't say, okay, this is what my father has said to me and I'm going to look at this and see whether or not I want to believe it.
Right.
We don't do that.
You're 5 years old.
We just believe it, exactly.
Right. Sure.
And the problem with that is that we believe things about ourselves that aren't true. Now, besides having maps about ourselves, we have maps about other people. You have ideas about black people, about white people, about Jewish people, about Christian people, about librarians, about lawyers. You know, we literally have convictions about every subgroup in our society. Now, these convictions are very important to recognize and pay attention to and to examine and to question because they directly affect how you behave towards those people.
This is Conversations. I'm Susan McGinnis. We're talking with Brian Zerr. All right, now continue on. They affect how I relate to those people.
Yeah, depending on what you believe about someone, on a very unconscious level, it's going to have an effect about how you treat them. It's also going to have an effect on what you're expecting from them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's important to question them, to make sure that we do not have convoluted ideas of who people are. Very quickly, just to give you sort of the categories, you know, we have maps, as they're called, these perceptions, these belief systems about who we are. We have maps about other people and who they are. We have maps about interaction, what's appropriate. What's appropriate for me to say to you and you to say to me.
How close to get.
Right, how close we can get and what's going to be too much of a risk and what's going to be safe. We have ideas about who we should be in society. Who are you striving to be as a person? Who am I striving to be? Why do I have those ideas? Why do I want to be a doctor or a lawyer or a trainer or whomever? And we have ideas also or maps about religion, philosophy, the nature of reality. And the key is for us to question all of our convictions and all of our belief systems so that they're actually ours, so that we own them and they're our conscious choices. Because if we're not making conscious choices and we're not aware of who we are and why we're who we are, then we're living unconsciously. We're living out prejudice. We're living out our fears and our insecurities. We're living out belief systems that may very well be inaccurate.
Two things strike me. One is that this is a lifetime job to examine each of these convictions, self-perceptions, perceptions of others. The other thing that strikes me about this is that I'm not sure many of us know how to ask those questions of ourselves.
That is a problem.
This is a problem.
Yes, it is a problem. To address your first statement, it is a lifelong process. This is not a quick fix.
Yeah.
There is not a quick fix that I have found that works. So once again, it is the road less traveled that takes a lot of courage, takes a lot of determination, and it needs to be driven by something, motivated by something. And looking at your second statement, which was, again,
that I don't know how to go about it.
That right. That we are not accustomed to this type of right. self-examination. My personal experience came from therapy myself. I've been in and out of therapy for 14 years. It's the best thing that ever happened to me, the best gift I've ever given myself. And one of the things that Dr. Peck talks about, of course, he was a therapist for about 17 years, mm-hmm. excuse me, is that therapy is not just to educate you. It's to train you as well. It's to train you to be your own therapist. And once you see how a therapist simply asks the questions that lead you to your own answers, you can begin then to ask yourself those questions. And you do become your own therapist. Right now, I go to therapy about 3 times a year, usually for a few weeks, just for a reality check, you know, an objective viewpoint. And if I'm in crisis, I will go. But for the most part, I think that the work that I've done over the last 14 years has allowed me to have a foundation where I know the traps I tend to fall into.
Mm-hmm.
I know my denial. I know what I tend to run away from. And I think that's where I learned to ask those questions. You know, it's very difficult for people to get into therapy sometimes, not only because of the financial investment, although it certainly varies to degrees, but you have to give up the image that you're okay. You know, the old book, I'm okay, you're okay, it kind of became a saying.
Right.
Now the new saying is, I'm not okay and you're not okay and that's okay.
Very nice.
You know, we're admitting that we're all really struggling with life. It's just what it is about, and that there's a lot to learn.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of room to grow, and there's nothing wrong with getting that help, that advice, that objective viewpoint. You don't have to be crazy to go to a therapist.
This is the best way as far as you're concerned.
Yes, that is my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. It is one of the best ways, certainly. The benefits of therapy are mind-boggling because you never quite know what you're going to get out of it. And when you start getting it, it's really pushing you forward and you're really accelerating. You're just making quantum leaps, and you can look back after a year of therapy and go, boy, did I save myself a lot of time and a lot of work.
Okay. Yeah. I want a couple of nuts and bolts answers here. How did you choose your therapist?
My therapist was a friend of the family's, actually, in the very beginning. As far as the way that I've chosen therapists over the years is through personal recommendations from friends or associates who have had successful relationships with therapy. It's a difficult thing to open up the yellow pages and just pick
yes.
a name that sounds good.
Right. What general tools would you suggest people apply to the choosing of a therapist?
There are a lot of referral agencies these days that you can call up, and they will tell you about the different therapists in the area, the different types of therapy. There are literally about 400 types of therapy out there. You know, traditional psychotherapy and lots of alternative therapies. And you need to find what's going to work for you. Most therapists will give you a free consultation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they'll talk to you and they'll tell you about what type of work they do and what their intent is and see if it coincides with where you're at and where you want to go.
But it's a good idea, like buying a house, buying a car, to do a little research first?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. You spoke a moment ago about motivation. You said if you're going to take this path, then there needs be a motivator. What's the motivator?
Well, it could be several different things. For me, it's the spiritual path. Now, to jump to sort of the end of the road less traveled, which is actually a premise throughout the book, Dr. Peck suggests that the purpose of our life is spiritual growth. That is the fundamental purpose of why we're here. Now, when we look at spiritual growth, what we're looking at is becoming one with God. Now, I don't mean to use God as the traditional term, because Dr. Peck is not referring to God in the traditional way. You know, he, she, all that is, higher consciousness, higher power, whatever you want to refer to as this divine wisdom. But that if our purpose is to grow spiritually, which means to have a loving intention and a loving action in every moment, if that is the purpose, then all of this fits in. You see, psychological growth and spiritual growth go hand in hand. The result of this whole process is maximum awareness. To be able to have a loving intention and to only act lovingly towards yourself and other people, it's going to take a lot of awareness. Mm-hmm. You need to find out and watch yourself and look at your buttons and look at your anger and your defensiveness and when you attack people and when you mistreat people. And you need to watch that. And as you learn about yourself and why you do the things you do, you're giving yourself an opportunity to become who you want to be. You see, you're never going to get to be who you want to be till you know who you are right now. That's the awareness process. What makes you tick? What makes you feel angry? What makes you happy? What makes you sad? What makes you any of the emotions that we experience?
Where is, when you talk about loving intention, talk me through the creation of real love. Now, I ask you about that because I'm thinking of something else. We have in this country a notion of falling in love, perfect love, brotherly love, romantic love, but the kind of loving intention you're talking to me about is not falling in love, romantic love, brotherly love.
No, exactly. Dr. Peck's definition of love is that it is the will to extend yourself for the purpose of nurturing your own or another's spiritual growth.
Say that again.
True love is the will to extend yourself for the purpose of nurturing your own or another's spiritual growth.
This is kind of circular.
Yes, and this is sort of a limited definition. Dr. Peck is the first to admit that it's a very limited concept of love. But the idea is that we have too many overgeneralizations about what love is. Number one, love is not falling in love. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that chemistry, that passion that we feel. It's a great thing to experience, but that's not real love. Love is not self-sacrifice, meaning you need to take care of yourself to be a whole person to share with other people. Love is not dependency. And I'm basically going through the list as he goes through them in The Road Less Traveled. And looking at dependency, it's important to realize that there are times when we are groping for people to take care of us. And in the same way, we are giving to other people quite often in our relationships. Taking care of each other is not necessarily love. It's an expression of love, but that's not love itself. And I guess that's what I mean to say.
And it can be a part and a periodic aspect of love, but it can't be the motivator, isn't that right? I mean, if you're not doing well, it's all right for you to risk some dependency and let me look after you. But I can't sacrifice my life to look after you. And, and by the same token, you can't define your life by the power I have in taking care of you. I mean, this is, it's when it gets kind of odd.
So the way that we sort that out is we constantly stay aware of our intention. Why am I doing this for you? And examining that intention and being very clear that it's a healthy intention.
Do I need to examine why I bring you a cup of coffee in the morning? No, I want to know.
At least once.
Okay.
At least once. Okay. You know, I get asked this question quite often because people say, boy, you know, you're just creating this confusion and this, you know, this obsession with awareness. And yet what it's about is getting to know yourself so well. And you will get to know yourself so well that you don't have to question absolutely everything. But my experience is that I have questioned everything at least once. And I haven't come up with all the answers. Uh-huh. There's still things I'm not sure of why I do, and that's part of my path and my searching. But on the other hand, some things are very obvious. And if you know why you're doing what you're doing, it really adds a lot of zest to it. It adds a lot of integrity to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you start asking yourself these questions, and let's do coffee in the morning. Why am I bringing Susan a cup of coffee in the morning? Does the answer come up right away for you?
No. Now, with coffee, probably. I would say to myself, well, I'm bringing Susan a cup of coffee this morning because I know she likes coffee. I like connecting with her that way in the morning. Mm-hmm. I enjoy doing something for her because she's a friend of mine.
Okay.
And that would be pretty obvious, and that's fine. That seems healthy enough. I'm going to bring Susan her cup of coffee. But when it comes to things like, oh, why do I react the way that I do? Mm-hmm. Why do I choose the relationships that I choose? Why am I in the career that I'm in? Why do I like to be a catalyst for people? Why do I like to travel? All those types, you know, those types of ideas, you're not going to come up with the answers right away. But you've started to ask the question, and that's the first step.
Right.
You know, if you're not willing to ask the question, then you need to look at why you're not willing to ask the question.
All right. And the answer comes up as part of a percolation process.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, once you've asked the question, the answers come from out of nowhere.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. What part does our unconscious, subconscious, whatever that is, play in this?
Well, it plays a big part in it. Dr. Peck believes that the part of God that is within us resides within our unconscious. That we have a great wealth of knowledge that resides in our unconscious that is there and accessible to us at certain times. What designates those times or that connection with the unconscious, we don't really know because it shows itself when it chooses to. But that basically through intuition, through dreams, through Freudian slips, the unconscious shows itself to us at certain times and gives us clues. My common experience is I quite often don't know what I'm feeling. And I think that's a pretty common experience. Mm-hmm. And quite often I'll have dreams that may be a completely different circumstance, but incorporate within them the same feelings that I'm experiencing in my real life situation. So I'll wake up and go, aha, mm-hmm. Boy, I'm really lonely. Or I'm really experiencing a fear of this certain type. And it'll give me a clue like that. And other times it's more obvious. You know, the other, a couple weeks ago, I got food poisoning. It was a dreadful experience. But basically, I had just started to get sick. It was in an evening after a presentation. And I was talking to my mother on the phone. And she says, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm sitting in my hospital room. And I went, wait a minute, I'm in my hotel. Huh. Now, I hadn't been in the hospital for 10 years. And I wound up in the hospital the next day because the food poisoning was so extreme. So those types of little things that happen, we need to watch.
Mm-hmm. Clues from our environment.
Clues from our environment. The grace of God, as Dr. Peck puts it.
The grace of God.
The grace of God. Grace is a force that originates outside of our consciousness that seems to support our spiritual growth. Now, we tend to take that term grace and connect it with Christianity. Mm-hmm. That's not what Dr. Peck is doing. He's talking about grace as this force that he has seen facilitate his process with his patients. He's seen it work in his own life, and certainly I've seen it work in mine again and again and again.
And once again, openness and attentiveness allows grace to emerge.
Yeah.
Others might call it serendipity.
Yeah, serendipity is the gift of finding agreeable things not sought for, so to speak, to put it as Dr. Peck puts it. But it's about creating what is called miracle-mindedness. And what that's about is being open to the possibility that God or this higher power is actually involved in your life on a moment-to-moment basis. And that a lot of the things that we take for granted in life are actually miracles. You know, we have this problem, we're looking for the burning bush.
What does that mean to you?
Meaning we're looking for the miracles
the big
where...
sign.
Yeah, the big ones, uh-huh. You know, where a disease is just completely cured or the answer to my life is given to me in a moment. So what we do is we tend to skate over or miss the wonderful little miracles that happen in our life on a daily basis. And in The Road Less Traveled, Dr. Peck talks about lots of those different miracles. He says having faith in God is not about having high hopes with little thought. It's simply about opening up your perspective to the possibility that there is a God, that there is a higher power, that there is this influence in your life, and watching for it, you know, and really being open to seeing what is happening in your life on a regular basis.
This is Conversations on KUAC FM. You're listening to Brian Suhr. Brian's background is in business, but he has a lifelong interest in his own spiritual growth. Some years ago, he was walking on a beach in Hawaii when he met a man who was actually interested in finding someone who would teach a class on personal growth. They came together, and for the last 3 years, right, Brian has been teaching a class on self-empowerment all over the country and a class on what is called The Road Less Traveled all over the country for the corporation called Career Track. He travels around the world for his own enlightenment and growth as well, spending a yearly spiritual retreat at an ashram in India, among other places where he seeks to find ways to grow. I'm Susan McGinnis. This is Conversations on KUAC.
You said something that I would like to clarify.
Yes.
You mentioned traveling around the world for my own enlightenment and spending time on an ashram in India. I think that is something that people have no idea maybe what you're talking about. So I just want to step in for a moment and clarify that it's basically a sanctuary where I'm involved with literally tens of thousands of people that are in a movement that supports all religions. It's not a religion itself. It's not a dogma. It's not about worshiping some guru. Mm-hmm. It's basically about recognizing that there are many paths and that there are many truths and that we need to support each other in those truths and accept each other in our own paths.
And the retreat process is a process of working with other people or working alone in concert with other people?
It's a process of just being with other people.
All right.
There's a lot of meditation that goes on, a lot of interaction that goes on between people just on a personal level. And there is also a leader of this organization, so to speak. His name is Sai Baba. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. And he will tell you himself that his role or his spiritual path is not about creating a new religion, creating a new dogma, or having anybody change. He's into making the Christian a better Christian and helping the Hindu be a better Hindu and the Muslim be a better Muslim. And that's the basis of this organization, as you would call it, that I'm involved in. And it's really wonderful. I mean, we have things like, I was there last around Christmas time. Christmas is one of the biggest celebrations. Actually, on the grounds there, they have statues of many of the religious leaders. And one of the things that they did was the Jewish people that were there were celebrating Hanukkah. And we're talking about thousands of people. And they invited all the Germans over for a forgiveness ceremony. You know, that type of, let's get past our stuff and let's be real people and come from the heart and come from that spiritual connection. So much of The Road Less Traveled is about acceptance.
This brings something to mind that I wanted to ask you about, too. And we have 5 or 10 minutes left in which to talk about it. You recently spent 4 days with M. Scott Peck in a workshop to talk about community, which seems to be what you do when you go to the retreat in India, is you work on issues of community. Is that right? Can you tell us about what you gained from the workshop?
Certainly.
Sort of how the road takes you to community, I suppose that's the question.
Yeah, exactly. Dr. Peck created the Foundation for Community Encouragement. And actually his new book, which is something, this is a good time to mention it, it's called A World Waiting to Be Born, is focused on community, on taking the principles of The Road Less Traveled and then moving them into the bigger picture, so to speak. And it was fascinating. I had no idea why I was going to this workshop. I've never been one that was that interested in community. Although I suppose I was, I just never really focused on it. I went there to meet Dr. Pack and talk to him and spend these 4 days with him. And what happened was he talked to us for about an hour about some things in his new book and said, all right, now what we're going to do is we're going to divide into groups of four, meaning we're going to take the 160 of you and we're going to divide you into four groups of 40. I went off in my little group. They put us in a room. We had chairs in an oval facing each other. These were all strangers, mind you. I didn't know a person in the room. We were all sitting in our chairs looking at each other, and the facilitator came in and said, all right, we're going to have 3 minutes of silence, and then I want you to speak when moved.
Oh, my.
That was it for 2 days. That was all the instruction we were given. So there I am facing 40 strangers going, well, what am I going to do here? What are we going
to
do?
Moved to do
moved
what?
Moved to do what? So a couple people took the lead and started saying, well, I'm here because. And what happened was there was one gentleman said, well, I'm here because I'm involved in a community and I'd like to learn about community building and take this back to my community. Well, there was a woman sitting across from him that raised her hand. She said, well, I'm very angry because I want you to be here for me. I don't want you to be here to learn about community and then leave. We're going to be in this room for actually 4 days together, and I want you to be here. And then she pushed buttons, and it was one big button push.
Wow.
The first day was chaos. In fact, Dr. Peck's very aware of what was about to happen, and basically for the first day or two even, you fall between chaos and pseudo-community, as he puts it.
This makes sense.
And then you eventually come to a place of community. Now, what it is it's a whole experience of building intimacy with strangers. By the time 2 days had gone by, we had gotten it all out. We had talked about, you know, the motives, and we had talked about the things that were said, and the things that we didn't like, and the things that we did, and it was very, very powerful, very, very powerful to become real with so many strangers. And that's really what building community is all about. Becoming real. Acknowledging emotional pain. Creating support systems. Creating relationships that are loving relationships. That push people towards spiritual growth. Creating communities about creating intimacy. And it was amazing. At the end of the second day, we had created community. I felt closer to those 40 people than I felt to a lot of people I would say I was friends with. It was an amazing experience.
Because after that time, you could do what with a member of that community that you couldn't do with someone who was in your acquaintanceship?
Well, number one, you just got past your boundaries. I mean, I hugged every single person, man and woman, in that room several times by the time the workshop was over. There was just sort of a freedom because I had been able to express who I was, and they had been able to express who they were. And it really came down to not agreeing with everyone, because that was basically impossible. And that's where we all were all coming from. I wanted people to agree with my lifestyle and who I am, and everybody else wanted the same, and it created conflict and chaos. Mm-hmm. What it came down to was accepting people, not agreeing with them.
But knowing who those people are and accepting them.
Yeah, and being willing to love them for their choices that they're making. There were people from all communities, from the gay community, from the Buddhist community, from, you know, you name it, a lot of diverse parts, or shall I say, many different types of people there. And it started out with everyone wanting to state who they were and get everyone else to say, you're okay.
Right, and that's fine with me.
Yeah, and that's a pretty difficult thing. I mean, there's different people that have different convictions. A lot of them are religious convictions or whatever. And it was hard for them to say, I agree with you. I think that what you're doing is right or wrong. It was hard to come up with that conviction. That was not what was working. But for me to say, I love you for who you are and acknowledge you and honor you, and I can respect our differences. I don't have to agree with you, but I can respect the choice that you're making.
Boy, I sure wonder if this is the challenge for the end of the 20th century.
I absolutely think so. I think globally we see it happening. Personally, we see it happening. There's so much going on towards this kind of goal. You know.
We are diversifying madly at the end of the 20th century. We are standing up for ourselves as Arabs and African Americans and gay people and straight people and religious fundamentalists. It feels like a time when community is at its most doubtful.
Hmm. That's an interesting perspective.
You would say to that what?
I would say that it's the closest we've ever come to building community, because the first thing and the first step that we're taking is being honest.
I see. And I am an Arab.
I am an Arab. I am gay. I am whatever.
Right.
And being willing to stand for that and be willing to express it to other people. I think what has happened so much in the past is that we have lived the illusion, the great American dream, and we have played the part of who we're supposed to be. And that just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. And the first step is for the one lady out of 40 to start pushing buttons, right? It's the first step is to push each other's buttons?
Yeah, it's really, well, it's just what happens.
Right.
It's the natural progression of expression. And once the buttons start getting pushed, then our challenge is to ask why. Why do I not agree with you? Why am I so against what you're saying? Why does it really bother me? And to start examining our convictions, these maps we were talking about, because they're so much a part of who we are. And at the same time, that's a problem because they're so much a part of who we are that we don't even see them.
The challenge is to see and to feel and to start asking what it is I'm seeing and feeling.
And to have a willingness to do so and to see the value in doing so. The end of that workshop of community encouragement was an incredible experience of 160 people that felt they were able to be themselves. They weren't necessarily agreed with, but they were accepted. And it gave us a sense of unity and community that was something I hadn't ever experienced before. And I'm very grateful to Dr. Peck for the experience.
And some sense I would expect of being able to go on from there, right?
Yes, absolutely. And then you take that into your personal life and you start looking around you and you start realizing how isolated most of us are and how many walls we have up and how careful we are around people. And you realize that we really live in very lonely states. And this is an American thing. And the reason I say that is because I've traveled around the world several times, been to many, many different countries and experienced a lot of other cultures. And the cultures that have less than we do are much closer, have much greater senses of community within them.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing to see.
I hear you saying we can get there from here, though.
Oh, certainly. Right. Yeah, I do believe that. And that's what drives me to be out there and sharing with people what I believe and what I think. And of course, I'm sharing Dr. Peck's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also able to sort of share me and how that ties in with my life and who I am and how it's worked for me.
Well, thank you for doing just that.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
Yeah. Good. Brian Zur, our guest today on Conversations. Thanks, Brian, a lot. The book is The Road Less Traveled. Before that, there was The Different Drum, both by M. Scott Peck, and his new book again is?
A World Waiting to be Born.
A World Waiting to be Born.
Also, I'd like to just mention one more book. This is called A Little Snowflake. It's a book by Dr. Peck for children.
All right.
It's a wonderful way to get children started on this road less traveled, so to speak.
Good. Lots to read. Brian, thanks a lot. I'm Susan McGinnis. This has been Conversations. Thank you, and I hope you join me again next week.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too.